Councilman George Smiley.
Here.
Myself. Councilman Tim Sheldon.
Here.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Here.
Councilwoman Diller.
Here.
Co-Chairman Jay Street. Councilman Street.
Here.
Councilman Dave Carter.
Here.
Councilman Dave Sackett.
Here.
Councilwoman Lee Durham.
Here.
And Council President Karen Hartley-Nagel.
Here.
Okay. All right. And we also have on the screen Colonel Bond, Chief Miller, Chief Perillo from our Volunteer Fire Service. And I think Chief Logaman will be joining us shortly. What's your pleasure with the minutes from the previous meeting of April 14th?
Motion to approve is as provided.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes as provided. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Oppose? So carry. Okay, first on our agenda, we have Ordinance 20-046, and this is introduced by Councilman Street and Councilman Bell, and I'll read this. We also have arranged to have Laurie Kane available should we need someone to actually speak to the grant, the ordinance. Ordinance 20-046, amend the grants budget, appropriate $548,419 from the United States Department of Justice to the Coronavirus Emergency Funds to be administered by the Department of Public Safety. Jay, did you, Co-Chairman Street, did you have any comment on this? I guess we could ask if Laurie's on board.
No, Mr. Chairman, I think it speaks for itself.
Okay. Laurie Kane, any comment on this particular ordinance?
No, this is going to be helpful for our department, obviously. And Chief, if you want to speak to this, I know you're on here too. But this came down from his staff that basically says the necessities that we're going to need to get through this COVID-19 crisis. It is basically PPE supplies. It's also some equipment to store those supplies. And lastly, some overtime for when people do start to get the itch to get back out and gather in the parks, that we keep in control of the social distancing and stay in touch with that. So it's a pretty all-encompassing, very, very, easy to use money. They did not make it difficult for us to obtain. This is probably one of the fastest grants that I've ever gotten in and turned around and back into our pocket. I think it took 4 days total. To put that into perspective, our JAG usually takes about 3 or 4 months. So they're definitely getting this money on the street very quickly.
Okay, Laurie, thank you for your comment. Let the record reflect that Councilman Woods has joined us. And I'm going to go to Councilman Smiley first, Chairman of Finance, before I go to Colonel Bond.
Ms. Kane, I would never question your interpretations, but I am just curious. These funds, retroactive to January 20th expenses?
Yes, they are, and which is also another very unusual. There's a lot of unusual things happening right now with this money, but so I hate to say the word. It's the S word. It's kind of called supplanting. But they have given us the right to go back to January 20 of 2020 for anything that we had bought to prepare for this. Because at that point, honestly, things were starting to come hit the states and we were kind of preempting. And we bought the Halo machine, which is a fogging machine that disinfects large offices, cars, that kind of thing. So lucky for us, they did let us retro back and we're going to get reimbursed for that.
I got to tell you, there's a whole lot of people on CNN and stuff that should talk to you because they didn't know about it till March. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're going to go to the next item on the agenda would be our update from our Newcastle County Police Department, Colonel Bond. And if there's anything you want to add to that grant, Colonel, please feel free to do so.
So we're very grateful for the grant.
obviously we'll be able to use that in our efforts to deal with this COVID-19 and our response to it. If you haven't seen our inventory of PPE equipment, we have quite a bit. And so being able to place it in the cages and have it secure is going to be a great benefit to us. In terms of updates on the police department, I don't have a whole lot. I will say that we are moving along in terms of getting ready for June 22nd Police Academy. Obviously, that's going to be slightly different than what we have done in the past, and our PDU is still working on that. We have hired three recruits that are currently working around the building, and they've been very helpful to us as we've had to deal with many of the changes here for PPE, as far as the COVID-19 and issuing of PPE equipment. We have another seven offers that will be made to applicants, a very diverse group. The last time when I met with PDU, and we also had interviews and take place last week as well. So we're moving along with that. On the COVID-19 front, as you know, we had one officer who tested positive about a week and a half ago. We got word of a second officer who tested positive. That officer is doing extremely well and should be back with us very soon. And that's all the updates that I have. Thank you.
All right, Colonel, thank you. I want to go to Co-Chairman Street. Do you have anything at this time, or you want to?
Well, while Chief is here, I find it appropriate to tell him, and I want the world to hear, what I have said at least on one previous occasion at a joint civic association meeting in my district. And that is very simply that generally people who break barriers are held to a higher and different standard. And more often than not, those who break those barriers tend to meet and exceed those standards. And I need for you to know, Chief, that I still have every confidence that you will continue to meet and exceed those standards, do the excellent job that you're doing as a police chief, in spite of all the adversity that you've been confronted with throughout your tenure, that in my view has a lot to do with the fact that you're the first African-American. And I find it necessary and appropriate to say that, and I'm going to continue to say it because that's what I mean from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman, Councilor Street. Okay, any questions or comments from other members of County Council? Okay, hearing none, we'll go on to Chief Logeman. If you could give us an update on the Emergency Medical Services Division, sir.
Sound.
We can't hear you. I think he's going to try a different square.
Yep, he's down. Yep. That's.
Is he going to call in?
Tara? All right, while we're, Chief, you all right? You with us?
He said go to the next one.
Okay. You're pretty good at reading sign language. That's good. All right, so we're going to move on. Next on the agenda, we have Chief Miller from our Emergency Communications Division. Chief?
Hi. Good afternoon. Chief Jeff Miller, Newcastle County Emergency Communications. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yep, that's an improvement from the last time. I'm going to go ahead and try to screen share. Hopefully that's working this time. So as an update, again, our authorized strength continues to remain the same at 95 personnel. Our operational strength currently today is at 88, and our current vacancies are at 11. They are all of our operations vacancies, or I'm sorry, our inner operations area. We have hired 4 new people since January, and we have 4 public safety operator tentative offers out today. And we anticipate that they will come on board June the 1st. That's a Monday, and that is the first new employee orientation, and that'll be done by a Zoom meeting as well, rather than bringing everyone into the 87 Reeds Way location. And then we are currently working on ways to educate the 4 new personnel in advance. These 4, unfortunately, are not participants of our last academy. So they're going to be starting basically from ground zero. So it's going to take a little extra effort. We've continued to identify what the pandemic effects could be for our county 911 center. But number one is to ensure the health and wellness of our personnel, maintain staffing consistent with handling the calls for service, identify threats to our service level, and identify call handling alternatives. The last meeting I mentioned, we had evacuated the 911 center to do a deep clean due to the fact that we had had numerous personnel who were self-quarantined based on waiting tests to come back after being exposed either to family members or other outside job influences where they were potentially exposed to the COVID-19. What we have done since about the first week of April is we've taken the command staff and split it in half. So today's my work from home day, and Donnie Holden would be the working at the headquarters today. And we alternate every other day. That way, in case any one of us should become ill or have a fever or any of the signs, we're not going to take down our entire command staff at one time. We might be able to better buffer for that. We do temperature check all of our employees coming in every shift. And if anyone is found with a temperature of 99.5 or higher, they're excused from work for that day. They need to contact their PCP, and then they need to be free of fever for 72 hours before returning to work. We still continue to supply disinfecting wipes, and we mandate at the start of each shift. It used to pre-March. It used to be, you know, when you felt the need to clean your workstation. Now it is you will clean your workstation before you start working on it. And then we provide hand sanitizer to everyone. I think I mentioned at the last meeting that you know, we handle 52% of the overall 911 call volume for the entire state of Delaware. And there is nowhere in the state of Delaware for us to go to a full fold down and maintain the same service level to our customers that we do within our own 911 center. So it makes it difficult and very challenging should we have to leave the center. We've had to date 8 people that have been in self-isolation or quarantine due to exposure concerns, but we have had no one test positive as of yet. We will begin next week. I believe it's Tuesday and Thursday. We will begin testing all of our employees for the COVID-19. And as soon as that testing is done, we're gonna go for the anti-serum type test after that as well to see if any of our people have already had it and then could potentially be a blood plasma donor. But as precautionary measures, we did contract with ServPro, as I had mentioned earlier, to deep clean the 911 center. It took 2.5 hours, and it required us to vacate the center. Vacating the center meant we had to operate out of these 3 trucks you see here. That's Kent County's. This is our 911 center truck, and to the left there is the Delaware State Police command post. So what we did was we folded our phone calls down to Kent Center 911. They would take our phone calls for us and then transfer them through the computer-aided dispatch CAD system to one of these vehicles, and the appropriate vehicle would make the dispatch. Luckily, we weren't busy. We did it at 3:30 in the morning. We hoped not to be busy at that time due to data that we had looked at over the past 3 months preceding. Other than a working fire alarm or something like that, we were at a go at 3:30. This, again, an anomaly. I've never seen our 911 center empty, but that's what it looks like when no one's working in it. And that's only happened one other time since we have occupied the new building. So what you're seeing here is, and this is through the glass, we weren't allowed in the room while they were doing the decontamination, but here's a person right here from ServPro, and they went and cleaned each and every console. So what we're looking at is a different way to approach this and to be more proactive in the future. We're going to purchase a biomist. This is basically like a suitcase type container, and it contains a biomist chemical that will allow us to do the decontamination ourselves and not have to evacuate the room. We'll have to adjust the way we operate within the room, but we will be able to do not the actual deep clean that ServPro can do. I still see us using their services in the future, but this is something, you know, we could do this once a week, and it's better for our employee environment, and it's something we can do ourselves with very little training, and we don't have to evacuate the room with very, very minimal disruption to our operation. We'll still be able to maintain the same level of service to our customers. And with that said, I'm open for questions.
Okay, any questions from council? Okay, I don't see any. Chief, thank you for the update, and we appreciate everything that you and your personnel are doing. We'll now go to Acting Chief Logeman.
You got me?
Who's got the presentation still up? There we go.
Okay. There you are.
Yes, all right. I think I have audio. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, super. I apologize for that. So recently we began testing of our paramedics. Most of you probably heard about it and read about it. We did two forms of testing, antibody testing and actual virus testing. We did the antibody testing through our contracted occupational health provider. We did that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, April 29, 30, and May 1. It was some interesting results. We did have two paramedics who had been positive for COVID and recovered, and the antibody test showed just that. It showed that they were positive for the IgG antibody. There's two antibodies, IgGM. An IgGG, an IgG. The IgM is what you really start to develop when you're in the beginnings of the infection, and that starts to tail off. And as that starts to tail off, the IgG antibody begins to rise. And that's what, in theory, may give people some immunity to future COVID. And obviously, that's still under investigation. But it was nice to see that those two did have the IgG antibody. We also had an employee who tested both for IgM and IgG without any symptoms. So that person was potentially infected with the virus and did not even know it. And we've heard anecdotally that that's happening, but we certainly saw it there. We've begun COVID-19 viral testing last Wednesday in cooperation with Nemours. That's once a week for 3 weeks. The way Nemours is doing that is an oral swab rather than the nasal swab. And through that process, we have found that one paramedic was positive for COVID-19 without any significant symptoms. So the beauty of that is it's protecting the paramedics, as obviously we're working close quarters with each other, and it's protecting the public as we're able to find that somebody was positive for the virus without any symptoms. remove them from the workplace and any paramedics they had close contact with. We're keeping a very close eye on our supply of personal protective equipment, also known as PPE. We're looking at the burn rate and predicting our future needs and keeping up with that. So call volume, I think on our last discussion, I noted that call volume really had decreased. Contrary to popular belief, we saw here comes a pretty significant issue, a pandemic, and our call volume actually decreased, mostly due to people staying at home, and unfortunately, some people not wanting to seek medical care because of their fears that if they did go to seek the medical care, perhaps they would contract the virus. We're starting to see some rebound effect from that, and I've had a discussion with our medical directors who work in the ERs here, and they're starting to see patients that are coming into the ER suffering pretty significantly from illness due to the fact that they haven't had their regular medical checkups with their physicians. They're not keeping up with their medications. They're ignoring signs and symptoms. So our call volume right now, we're about average, slightly below average. We had a nice weekend. If you have a nice weekend, obviously the call volume jumps because people are out and about. I think as most people have seen, people are out, starting to go out more often. And we're closely monitoring that call volume. Certainly, as I said, people are going out and about, and obviously we're looking at in the near future, some phased openings. So people might be going back to work and going out shopping, et cetera. So we're still able to respond to all our calls for service. Certainly and I've had some discussion with our employees, our paramedics. So definitely an increased stress. It's already a stressful job, but then you have this virus that you have to put all the PPE on and then always have concerns of potentially contracting it, bringing it home, et cetera. So it is stressful. We're continuing to support them by making sure they have all the up-to-date information from public health, making sure they have all the PPE they need. And with a lot of the generosity of the community, they've been providing meals. It's been nice to have some of the people we have over at our station too, off Old Airport Road, and we have people filter through there and get a lunch and let them know that they're appreciated for the job they do. And that's my update, sir.
Great, thank you, Chief. Any questions or comment from members of council? Councilwoman Dee Durham.
Thank you. I just was wondering if you've, as has been reported in some of the news nationally, if you've seen any uptick or any anomalies with domestic violence or suicides?
I would really have to look. It's kind of difficult to parse out the suicides from the call volume. Anecdotally, I can tell you that we've seen some. Unfortunately, there's always a certain level that we do see. But I can't tell you that we've seen, Colonel Bond may be able to speak better to the domestic violence portion. Not that we've seen from domestic violence, certainly. Unfortunately, suicide is something that we deal with regularly. I can't say that there is an uptick.
Okay. All right. Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Thank you. Mark, when you had people that tested for the antibodies, did they give you any indication as to whether those last, like other viruses, or if it's temporary, do they fall off after a few months, a year? Was there anything that was discussed about that?
Yeah, we've had lots of discussion with public health. Now, certainly the IgM, that antibody that you develop early on really starts to wane off almost to nothing. The IgG antibody is the one that you hang on to. Since the virus is so new, they really don't know how long that IgG antibody is going to stick with you. Is it going to be 6 months, a year, or things like some people have experienced with chickenpox in the past, where it's almost a lifetime that they experience those antibodies in their system. So there's certainly, you know, a bunch of research going on in regards to that.
Okay, so your people were tested fairly early in the process. Are you going to go through interim testing to kind of check that?
right now we're doing, we did the antibodies, we're doing the virals now for 3 weeks. I think that we're going to see a lot of testing come out. You hear about with the general public, and also once more of this testing becomes available, that I think that we're going to see first responders receiving testing on a somewhat regular basis.
You know, considering that they're talking about this going into the fall or resurging again in the fall, I would think that if we did an every other month, quarterly, something or other testing, so that we would have the ability firsthand to understand if it's if the antibodies are holding or not. So that'll make a difference in the fall, I think, how you treat this.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comment? Okay, hearing none, I want to recognize Council President Pro Tem Penrose Hollins has been in attendance throughout the meeting with us. And our next on the agenda would be our Emergency Management Coordinator, Dave Carpenter.
Good afternoon, everyone. Dave Carpenter, Nicasse County Emergency Management Coordinator. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. All right. So staff remains available and ready. We are doing a combination of telecommuting and office work or off-site work, depending on where the work takes us, Gilliam Building or other sites that we typically visit and hit upon. So we are trying to limit the amount of people that are in the public safety building or within the office at one time. So we're coordinating the daily rotation, similar to what Chief Miller stated about his admin staff. There's a few of us in on Monday and a few Tuesday and et cetera. So we're coordinating that on a daily basis. We continue to hold tri-weekly coordination calls with the Emergency Operations Center. So Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays in the morning, we're holding coordination calls with the three counties in the city of Wilmington and DEMA to discuss ongoing operations, ongoing activities, and keep abreast of what's going on with DEMA and public health at the state level. And then we were also holding bi-weekly coordination calls with all the statewide partners with public health and DEMA giving reports, and then other partners that are supporting efforts such as DSP, National Guard, DLDOT, those reporting in, and the three counties and the city also reporting in on their activities. And then in addition, on a weekly basis, the DEMA was holding and public health were holding a coordination call for all the fire department and police department chiefs on a weekly basis. This week, they're going to start consolidating the Tuesday and Thursday calls statewide partners with the fire department, police department calls into one call on Thursday and scale that back to a weekly call. In addition, we are following the state actions log and updates daily that are occurring throughout the coordination piece and providing some of that updated information for the alternate housing location status. So if anybody's not aware, a large portion of the effort in dealing with COVID-19 has been what's referred to as non-congregate sheltering. As a typical basis during hurricanes and other disasters, typically we have to shelter a population and we put them into a what's considered a congregate shelter, you know, a fixed location in a site that we deem that we get Red Cross support and other agencies support in dealing with people who are displaced from their homes. In this situation, it's been the utilization of the hotel motel industry and the partnership with them that has benefited us in utilizing, one, taking people that don't want to go home to high-risk situations and isolating them if need be under guidance from public health. Of course, responders that become exposed can also become or get isolated and be put into hotel motel. And then the other two large congregates of personnel that have been really receiving support is the Division of Substance Abuse and Mental Health. Clients have been, DSAM has been working vehemently with hotels and motels to place some of their clients so that they remove them from some other populations and separate them out in order to prevent the community spread. And then in addition, the DHS service, state service centers, we've been coordinating with them very heavily in the past couple of weeks, initially not, and that's something that, you know, we realized was occurring, and we started coordinating with them on the placement of homelessness population that has come out of the hospital or has been identified as COVID-19 and has to be isolated from the rest of the homeless population. So to prevent, obviously, prevent that spread into the homelessness shelters and also prevent that spread into the rest of the homelessness population. In addition, we toured and facilitated, toured a site up in Glen Mills, Pennsylvania, and we're facilitating a service agreement to hopefully provide the opportunity for Newcastle County and the volunteer fire departments the ability for them to decon their N95 masks and respirators. This is a process being done, completed by a company out of Ohio that just recently received a Department of Defense contract, a $4.2 million Department of Defense contract, to place about 30 locations nationwide across the country, mostly in the highly metropolitan areas. And the two closest to us really is one in Glen Mills, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia, just across the state line, just north of the off the Concord Pike there. And then also the next closest one is outside of Baltimore. And so the southern counties are looking at, they can possibly utilize that one. Of course, we can utilize the one in Glen Mills. It's, you know, 20-25 minute drive away from most of the county. The next thing is, in light of the fact that last week was National Hurricane Preparedness Week, we have already started with FEMA specific coordination calls on dealing with the hurricane season and what to expect with now the added effort of COVID-19. Obviously, as I mentioned, the sheltering is going to be an issue. We also talked about evacuation process and whether or not, you know, what's going to be the comfort level of people evacuating, and if their state or homeowners still in other states, where are people going to have the tendency to go? Are they going to evacuate out of the county in the state, or are they going to stay or remain where they are? And obviously that's going to present some additional challenges to us if that population doesn't evacuate in the hazard areas that we normally expect them to evacuate. So we've already had two conference calls on that, and that looks to be continuing, and that's FEMA, the state, and the county emergency managers and other agencies that are all involved in those efforts. We're also providing some mutual assistance with the municipalities in developing some restoration guidelines. And I say restoration as far as getting somewhat towards operational components. Some of you are familiar with, I'm also just starting discussions with the Community Services Department on summer camps. I just had a conference call today with the city of Newark on their summer camps, what that picture is going to look like if they start running summer camps again, when they're going to start them, and how, what some of the efforts that they need to put in place in order to get those summer camps up and running with some of the protections that are going to need to be completed. And they're utilizing some guidance that's already being put out there by the American Parks and Recreation Association and the state's Parks and Recreation Association. And then last but not least, we facilitated the request for public assistance. So that has been filed with DEMA for the public assistance program. That is the typical disaster, Stafford Act disaster reimbursement process that gets initiated by the governor's request to the president for the emergency declaration. And then in addition, we were awarded the major disaster declaration, which opens up additional efforts and funding methods within that public assistance program. And then recently, DEMA and the governor crafted the request to the president to open up that program from the normal 75% reimbursement to 100% reimbursement. So we're awaiting determination from the president and FEMA on awarding that 100% reimbursement program. So that is going to open up the normal disaster assistance process, which right now, as we all discussed and some of you have seen and known, is going to be a really balancing act in working with finance and some of the other efforts that are going on. You're approving the legislation for the grant that is going to be received that's related to COVID-19 funding. There's the whole CARES Act funding that is a separate CARES Act panel of funding. So balancing all this out of where certain items and certain instances are going to fall into those funding methods is going to be a unique challenge going forward. And finance and the county executive are working, I believe, with the task force in order to iron it out. There's some additional guidance coming down from the state and the DOJ on some of the federal funding. So I don't have particulars on that yet. So I don't know if Vanessa or someone from finance is on that might touch on that later in a different standpoint when I get to that point. That's all I have, if anybody has any questions.
All right, thank you, Dave. Any questions or comment from members of council? President Hartley Nagel?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Bell. In referencing Ms. Durham's comment about domestic violence and or suicide mental health, could we have Colonel Bond speak to that? He and I had some discussions, and he has moved ahead on that, and I just like an update as to where we are now. He's done a great job with that.
Colonel Bond?
Yes, good afternoon, Colonel Bond. Yeah, I raised my hand. I'm not sure if it actually came through or not. But just to report, just to provide a little bit of update on that. To our surprise, we've only seen a very slight increase in domestic violence calls for service. They're ranging in the area of 7 to 9%. We hit a high somewhere in the middle of March. The middle of April. And then since that point, it's been coming down, but we are at roughly 7 to 9% more domestic calls than what we were using the baseline of the week prior to the state of emergency. In terms of suicide, suicide complaints and mental health calls for service, both of those are trending downward. I give a lot of credit to our behavioral health unit. I'm not sure if many of you were made aware, hopefully it did reach you, but last Tuesday, the Behavioral Health Unit, along with numerous partners of ours, Recovery Innovations, Christiana Care, quite a few other resource providers, we all converged on the Lieutenant Joe Zerber Police Academy grounds, and we had an actual outreach effort there. We had quite a few people that came through. We had resource information available for them. Everyone who was involved in this were utilizing social distance as well as PPE equipment. But overall, I thought it was a very well done outreach. And the plan is that we want to continue to take this on and move it around to different locations, do a little bit more publicizing of it, but to take it out so that we can introduce and bring information to the community. So I think we're doing and moving in the right direction with that. Again, my hat goes off to the members of the Behavioral Health Unit for their work on that. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you, Colonel. Co-Chairman, Councilman Street.
Chief, do we have any data, any knowledge about incidents of child abuse?
Vaughn Bond. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but right now, again, that's an area that has, the last time I looked at it, it remained relatively flat. Now, I'll tell you, the areas that we have experienced increases in are vehicle thefts and also some of the shootings that have been taking place, in particular in the neighborhood of Edgemoor. We have made a plan in place, and it's already in effect right now to deal with some of the issues that are taking place in Edgemoor. This morning, I had a call with one of the community leaders up there and explained to them exactly what it is that we were going to do. So we have seen that. What we're noticing is it's becoming more and more common that our vehicles, our stolen vehicles, are used to commit other crimes. The interesting thing is, last week, for example, there was one day when we had 5 vehicles that were stolen throughout Newcastle County. All 5 of those vehicles, the vehicle owners left their keys inside of the vehicles, which obviously makes it a lot easier for their vehicles to be stolen.
Co-Chairman Street, and then Council President Hartley Nagel.
Well, I'm aware and appreciate, that's in Councilman Cartier's district. I don't want to go too far. But I'm concerned and aware of what you're trying to do in the new programs. But same thing I've been saying for years, far too often there's a correlation between shootings in the county and shootings in the city. And I know that's part of the situation in Edgemoor, and I also know it's part of the situation in my district outside the city. But
yes.
I want to go back to my original question. And I understand we don't have data. But, school's not open, so kids can't complain to teachers. Kids are locked in, and I'm just concerned that even though we don't have data, There's not a whole lot of access now to the hotline and no outside information. And in other situations, we have figures to show that there's been a significant increase in suicide, domestic violence, and child abuse.
That's great.
Colonel, any further comments?
No comments.
Okay. Hearing none, I called on President Hartley Neagle first and then Councilman John Cartier next, who has joined us in the meeting a while back. Council President Hartley Neagle?
Yes, I want to thank you, Colonel Bond. I know you've been right on top of this since, I believe it was the second week that we were dealing with the coronavirus. So thank you for being proactive. One of the other questions I want to ask, and I had not talked to you about, Jay brought up a really good point with child abuse, but we also have the other end of it, which is elder abuse or neglect. Are we seeing that? If we are getting calls, where do we direct them because of the coronavirus? What is the protocol in addressing that? We have many elderly in Newcastle County. We also have people with dementia. And so can you speak to that, or is that something you just don't have any information on right now?
Well, anytime when we have instances like that or cases involving the elderly, obviously, and if it's dementia related and so forth, we can always have our behavioral health unit involved in it. We also deal with the Department of Aging. We make referrals to them. But the reality is the majority of the time, we actually seek to work with the families and getting that information to the families so that they know which way to go. Our behavioral health unit, Colleen Kearns and Alex Schofield, have done a great job in terms of going out, doing the outreach to these families and assisting them. And so I think that from that standpoint, we do have a pretty good grasp of what's taking place and the ability to provide them with resource information that could be very helpful.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or a comment from anyone on County Council? I'm sorry, Councilman John Cartier.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Chief, I just want to redirect back to the Edgemoor Gardens shooting.
Yes.
We had one discussion where you seemed to indicate that this was incited through social media. And I just want to know, are we monitoring the social media related that could be potentially contributing to this? And just your comments generally about it.
Yes. What I can say is, and I forgot to touch on that point that Councilman Street brought up about a lot of the perpetrators coming from the city of Wilmington. He is on point with that. What we found during the course of many of our investigations is that a lot of these incidents are starting as a result of someone feeling like they were disrespected on social media. Oftentimes, it has been individuals that live in the city, and they are now in confrontation with individuals that live out in the county. And so you have them coming into the county and doing shootings, and you also have some individuals from the county that are going into the city. And at the crux of the entire matter, what we found out so far has been social media. And as you know, with every investigation that we have, social media is always a point that we check to see whether or not we can garner any additional information that might help us in solving that case. As me and you talked about, and I was quite candid with you the other day, we're running into the problem that has been going on for a number of years, but it seems to be growing and getting worse. And the fact that we have victims who have been shot that refuse to cooperate with the investigation. It's to the point that we have some victims who don't even want to give us their names, let alone tell us what is behind the shooting. And so it continues to go back and forth. And it really makes our job a little bit more difficult in terms of trying to find out who is responsible. So we will lean on things such as social media, cell phones, neighborhood canvases. We have to go really out of our way when the person who is a victim in that case, would be able to clear up that, give us the information that we can follow up on so that we can make an arrest. But unfortunately, that just not, it just doesn't seem to be their thought process anymore. And so it makes it that much more difficult for us. But yes, social media is checked on a regular basis.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councilman, Colonel. Next on the agenda, and we're very pleased this afternoon to have with us Rich Perillo, Chief Rich Perillo, First Vice President of our Newcastle County Volunteer Fire Service, and I hope that we'll encourage more participation in the future with meetings such as this to give us a perspective and update from our first responders throughout the county, our Volunteer Fire Service. Chief?
Thank you, Councilman Bell, and the rest of council and the other participants. Again, it's Richard Perillo from the Newcastle County Volunteer Firefighters Association. President Watson does apologize to all of you for his absence. He was stuck at work, and then called to see if I could jump in. So you've heard some long reports, but very necessary. I'll do my best to keep them short. But we do thank you for the opportunity to have a seat here with our public safety partners in county government. I'm very excited, or at least proud to say that the fire service, our leaders of all 21 departments, took an opportunity prior to the statewide shutdown to develop a continuity of operation plans that they would follow to ensure that we had emergency plans for our emergency responders to follow during this pandemic. We were able to meet as leaders to discuss those options, the logistics, as well as operations that we'd be put in place. Fortunately, we do have some mutual aid agreements, not just some, but very many mutual aid agreements amongst the 21 departments and the city of Wilmington that have been in place for many years. And that's assisted us with our incident response plans during this process. So smooth transition into the need for services and for the need for the departments to work together. We followed our processes of the past, but to enhance them throughout this pandemic. The continuity of operation plans, what that's done is develop strategies for the departments to not only communicate for shared staffing, though I understand I was introduced with the Volunteer Firefighters Association. I know that every one of you are aware that our service is provided by career, part-time, and volunteers alike. So our full-time and part-time staffing and our volunteers are working tirelessly. It's not just contacts with people or patients or members of the public with the virus, but it's exposures to that as well. We've experienced on several departments, some on significant levels where numerous personnel had to be quarantined. I'm sure you've seen through the public service announcements that went out originally, we had a company that had to quarantine personnel in the number of the teens because of exposures. Our public service announcement went out. I'm home and my children are laughing or screaming. Sorry for that. Our public service personnel were exposed to that, and our communications chief Miller, as well as our other public safety partners, and I'm going to highlight Jeff for this, is that he noticed that there was a need to add the requirements, the questions, whether people have been exposed to this virus so that the responders could be notified when they're going. Unfortunately, we experienced some people who had not communicated that even after Chief Miller implemented that on communications, and it's been addressed through our public service announcements. We hope to say that it's worked, but unfortunately we just saw recently where some field responders were again exposed to people who hadn't communicated that. We are going to have another public service announcement that's going to go out. We've been assisted by county government through those media outlets and contacts that you all have, but also through social media. And I am, again, proud to say that our next public safety announcement is going to be in Spanish as well, so that we can communicate with the members of our community that speak and read Spanish, so they'll be able to see what it is that we need from them as well. Looking over a few things. We have received sufficient, at least an adequate number of personal protective equipment pieces. Not only through county government, but through donations and also through the progressive moves of our department, our departments for purchasing that early on. Both associations, this association that I represent, as well as the Chiefs Association, have had, we say weekly, but it's turned out to be daily, Zoom meetings such as these to communicate together to make sure that we are receiving information from your government, our government, as well as other partners, then communicating that on to our department leaders. It seems to be serving them very well so that they can continue to update or enhance their continuity of operations plans so that they continue to provide services. We haven't seen a reduction or a need. There was a fear that if we had too many exposures, as we've seen in some neighboring states where fire companies were almost shut down because of their entire staffing being exposed to this virus. But again, complementing these operations plans, companies that were affected at large numbers were able to implement other strategies to continue services. So our public has not seen a decrease in anything to what they call 911 for fire, rescue, and EMS. So they've done an excellent job with that. Just a little side note, or at least an important thing, is that we use numerous areas or numerous vendors or agencies for training. That has been canceled, as I've heard other council people talk about school being canceled. That falls in line with our training schools. So that's affecting our recruitment process as well as retention. Companies are now tasked with doing a lot of this in-house. And we don't know what effect that's going to have for our opportunity to continue to grow our staffing. As some of you are aware from being involved in the service yourself, that is a big need for us to continue to replace those who our attrition rate can be high at times. Right now, everybody's holding tight, but the fear that our recruitment process could be affected because of the training opportunities is definitely on our mind. And we're working with those vendors, with those partners, to see what else we can implement as soon as possible. We are anticipating some funding reductions, not only through appropriations, the grant and aid, but we also have those other income sources, not only our civilian donations or EMS billing, but also the hall rentals for the companies that have that as well. Many companies work on the fiscal year. They're planning their budget process now. Some of those things are in the unknown, but we're doing our best to make sure that services aren't affected. We are anxious to see the reimbursement opportunities through this CARES Act and the other funding options that you've already put through. I know that several of you have already contacted the leaders within your local fire companies, and we appreciate that confidence or that reassurance that the money's being made available and they're going to be able to submit for reimbursement. So we ask for your support on that and look forward to taking benefit of that as well. I think that should be okay. If you have any specific questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right. Thank you, Chief. Any questions or comment from members of County Council? Councilwoman Janet Kilpatrick.
Thank you. When you have a public service announcement, could you make sure that it gets over to council and we can disseminate that through our email lists also?
I will do that, and I apologize. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I was going to say, such as, so that we can mention that, you know, reinforce you in that they need to notify every time they make a 911 call that there could be COVID related.
Yes, ma'am. I will, and I can apologize for our association for not forwarding it. If council did not receive that, I apologize. We had thought that we had put that out to everyone, but and since you brought up the PS, the public service announcement, the first couple have addressed the issue with the reporting. The Smart 911 partnering with your communications is also included, and it appears that we've seen an enhance or an increase in participation in that as well through those PSAs and many other things. We're also developing continuous PSAs, so I promise you we're not going to send you the same one with just a different date on it. There are going to be other things mentioned in there, especially since the governor continues as he plans to lift the restrictions, especially business areas that could affect our operations if the governor, as he plans or has already started to open some businesses, has some outside process for people to go into that could affect fire lane things, it could affect our responses. So these PSAs will not just be a repeat time and time again. I promise you that. They will be updated as it goes along.
Thanks.
Councilman Cartier.
Thank you. Chief Pearl, I'm glad you're here to represent the association. I just wanted to get a picture from you on your side. Are you coordinating well with the Newcastle County with the PPE supplies that we have accumulated? Are they being made available? Are you able to make sure that all the fire first responders out of the fire companies have proper PPE?
Yes, and I apologize again. I'll probably continue to apologize, but being my first one here, I'm sure you'll give me a slide on this. When I mentioned PPE, We have received great benefit from Newcastle County. Kenny Dunn has been, Director Dunn has been in contact with our department leaders on a daily basis, has ensured that we know what is not only available, but has provided it as well, and what is going to continue to be available through county government. Of course, we've received it through other avenues, but county government has been tremendous in making sure that we have what is needed. So thank you for that. I think that was your question. I didn't know if there was any added.
Yes. I know this evening council is going to be voting on the appropriation of the CARES Act funding over $322 million. And I can tell you that for myself personally, providing assistance to the volunteer fire companies for all of the expenses you've incurred in this crisis is, I think, a very important and worthy goal of that funding. So I just want to make sure you know we are going to be acting on adoption. Of course, it's the will of council, but it's an unprecedented crisis, and we're going to have some unprecedented resources to assist our allied first responders and other nonprofit organizations and others throughout the county.
Councilman, I thank you for that. Councilman Bett, I'm sorry if I'm speaking out of.
No, you're fine. You're fine, Chief.
Councilman Cartier, I do appreciate those words. I know firsthand that you've contacted several of your local companies and reassured them that money is being worked on. And we thank you for that. Of course, the association or our member departments have a lot of questions. But again, if I could use one word, it's just the anxiousness or anxiety to say that we are looking forward to that reimbursement. Definitely encouraged with being a part of tonight's meeting, and hopefully we can continue that. So as these programs or as this act is developed, we'd like to be able to influence what our needs truly are. So it's coming from us. So if there's ever an opportunity, if there's a program that's about to be implemented or a fund that's about to be developed or expressed, contact with us directly would definitely be openly welcome so that we can tell you how it's truly going to affect us firsthand.
Thank you, Chief. Any other question or comment from members of council? Hearing none, I'd just like to add one thing, and that is that Co-Chairman Street and I feel very confident that we can speak on behalf of all of County Council when we say thank you to the men and women of our volunteer fire service for all you do day in and day out. And as all of us realize that every time a paramedic unit responds, our volunteer BLS unit responds. We have a two-tier system throughout Newcastle County, and that doesn't stop the normal calls that come in, whether they're motor vehicle collisions or fires or whatever they encounter. So with that, we thank you very much, Chief, for being here. If there's no other question or comment, we'll go to public comment.
I don't see any public comment.
All right. Thank you, Tara. No public contact. What's your pleasure with the meeting?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion made, Councilman Smiley.
Second.
Seconded. Who was that?
Councilwoman Diller.
Okay. Councilwoman Diller. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. Councilman Smiley, finance will begin.
Councilman Bell, I'm chairing that. We'll give everybody an opportunity for a little break. Let's convene like 5 after 10.
Five after back for finance with Councilman John Cartier.